What if the way you've been telling your life story reveals the secret to what is holding you back? Stories play an integral part in how we see not only ourselves, but the whole world. Stories are more than just an important part of communication. They also reveal hidden aspects of our inner talk, which can either support us or end up holding us back from the very things we want most in life, without us even realizing it. Join author, mindset coach, and award-winning singer-songwriter Carrie Rowan on her show, Look for the Good, every Monday at 5 a.m. and 5 p.m. when she shares nuggets of wisdom from her internationally best-selling book, Tell a New Story, 5 Simple Steps to Release Your Negative Stories and Bring Joy to Your Life. Carrie's powerful stories and compelling guests will empower you to change how you look at your own life while giving you some powerful tools and tips you can use every day to help you feel better and move yourself closer to the life you've been longing to live.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Look for the Good. I'm your host, Carrie Rowan, mindset strategist and life coach, and I love sharing nuggets of wisdom about the stories we tell each other, but more importantly, the stories we tell ourselves. So join me and my special guests as we share our personal stories of strength and triumph every week here on Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. You can listen online on your mobile device, in your car, or ask Alexa to play Dream Vision 7 Radio. And tune in every Monday at 5 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern Time to get real stories and real tips on how to turn your story and your life around. And join us, evolve with us as we unite humankind with universal love. Hello, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to Look for the Good. And I'm Carrie Rowan, as you know, and I'm super excited to introduce you to our special guest today. We have Joyce Culhawick in the wings. Hello, Joyce.
Hi, Carrie. I'm so happy to be here.
It's so great to have you on the show. I'm super excited. And let me read a little bit of your bio. Joyce and I met at a chamber event, and it was so cool because I got to see her speak and hear her story, and I was so moved. Let me tell you a little bit about her in case you don't know. So Joyce is best known as the Emmy Award-winning arts and entertainment anchor for WBZ Boston, and she's currently lending her expertise as an arts critic, advocate, motivational speaker, and cancer crusader. I love that title. As the first arts reporter critic in the U.S. to appear every weeknight as part of a local TV news team, Culhawick gave journalistic staff to arts reporting and greatly enhanced her station's commitment to community service. She's president of the Boston Theater Critics Association, a member of the Boston Society of Film Critics, and Boston Online Film Critics Association. She's covered local and national events from Broadway to Boston to Hollywood, reporting live from the Oscars, the Emmys, and the Grammys. Nationally, Culhawick is on public radio stations as a panelist on the Word Game quiz show Says You. She's also co-host syndicated movie review programs with Roger Ebert and Leonard Maltin. Look for her arts and entertainment reviews online at joyceschoices.com. And she's a three-time cancer survivor. She testified before Congress on the 20th anniversary of the National Cancer Act. For over 25 years, she's chaired the American Cancer Society's largest spring fundraising campaign, Daffodil Days, served on the ACS Advisory Board, and has helped raise millions of dollars for ACS First Hope Lodge in Boston. The ACS has honored Culhawick with its National Bronze Medal for her work. And the list goes on and on. I'm just reading a small portion of that, everybody. So welcome, Joyce.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
I remember watching you with my parents on Evening Magazine back in the day.
I know. You grew up watching me. Yeah, I love that.
I totally did. And I didn't know really your background. So when you told that story about being an English teacher in school, I was like, that has got to be the coolest, coolest thing ever. Like, how did you go from English teacher to media star?
Well, it was easy in a way. I didn't like teaching English in high school. It's pretty simple. I love the kids. I like the material, but there were so many things about that job that I didn't like. And I kind of always knew I didn't want to be a teacher, but I was interested in the arts, and I was interested in stories and narrative and movies and theater and music and dance and all of these things, and never knew how to bundle it all up. And I thought, well, teaching, I could teach. And so I tried it, and nothing about the logistics of the job appealed to me. I'm not a morning person. I mean, honestly, what time are we starting this? It's noon. That's me. The crack of noon. That's when I start to awaken. I mean, it'd be better if we did this at midnight. But I've always been a night owl. So teaching high school, you know, having to be alert, and then the AWOLs and the paperwork and the emotional burden of teaching 165 high school students every week was huge. They were 17 years old. I was 22. I was really young and I didn't know who I was to them, a friend, a mother, a mentor, it was tough. It was hard. I feel like I needed to be actually older and have more life experience under my belt. But the key thing I think for me was seeing how much the people around me loved doing this job. What a vocation it was for the teachers that I taught with, who were some of the best ever anywhere. I was a teacher at Brookline High School in Massachusetts, and that is one of the preeminent high schools in the country. And I could see what these teachers were bringing and the love they had and the commitment. And I knew I would never be one of them. That I would never feel that way about this job. I mean, I knew it would probably get easier as I got more experienced, but I could see that there was an element there that this was not my path. So I decided with the guidance of my very instinctively smart mother, who herself always wanted to be a teacher, but never did. She ended up being an executive secretary and an events planner. She was a very accomplished person in an era when women weren't out working full time. She was doing that. I grew up with a working mother and a working grandmother. But when I said to my mom, you know, I don't think I like this, but everybody's saying to me, stay there. It's a great job for a woman. You have your summers off. It's, you know, blah, 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 blah. Mm. It's easier. My mother said, Joyce, if you don't like this job, quit and get something you really love. And I knew she was right. And it was what I needed to hear. And I needed to hear it from someone whose opinion was really going to land for me. And that would be my mother, because I knew she could see me. She saw who I was. And I quit cold at the end of 2.5 years. And I had the whole summer off. And I started looking around for work. And I explored a lot of different things. And I was in no rush. I thought, I don't care if I have to wait 5 years waiting tables or doing whatever. Mm-hmm. I wanted to find that thing that would make my heart beat fast is the only way I can put it.
I love that.
And I was young and I felt like, and I was unencumbered. I was not married. I had no children. I could move anywhere, do anything. I thought, I got time. And I wish more young people felt like that. Take that time when you're kind of free and clear, explore and take a chance and take a risk and make mistakes. And there are no mistakes. There are no mistakes. It's all just learning and refining the path. You know, jump in one place and you say, I don't like this. So then you adjust, or I like this part of this, but not that part. And so it's all a big adjustment and a refining. And it continually changes through your entire life.
Right? It's so true.
I mean, I'm still choosing my path, refining my path. So there is no getting there. We all know this. It's about the path.
Right.
These cliches are all true, but we need to sort of understand them. So that summer, I was refining my path.
Mm-hmm.
I was jumping in everywhere. And I had a couple of, one day I turned on the TV and there was this show on called Evening Magazine. I love that show, but it was a brand new show at the time. This was the late 70s.
Wow.
And there was no other show on television like this. It was the first sort of feature magazine show that had people out in the field talking to interesting people and doing stories, and they weren't sitting behind a desk or anything like that. And it was brand new. And I thought, oh, look at that. I bet I could do something like that. But that was a fleeting thought. The next thing I did was make an appointment to meet the head of the communications department at Simmons College. It was a college and not a university at the time. And I had not majored in communications. I majored in English, music, and education. So I decided to go to communications because, as you can tell, I like to talk. I was always a presenter. I won an oratorical contest in elementary school. I mean, I was always like the talker. So, at the end of a 2-hour session, I said to this person, so do you think I might have a career in television? He said, yeah, you know, call up this woman who graduated from Simmons. She's just started to produce a brand new show on TV called Evening Magazine. And I thought, oh, there's that name again. And I didn't bother to call. I left there and it was just something that I filed away. And then I was getting married that summer. And my future mother-in-law had a stationery store, was preparing our wedding invitations, and told me that she was also preparing wedding invitations for another young woman who was getting married and leaving Massachusetts. And she was leaving her job. And her job was as an on-air contributor on a TV show called Evening Magazine. And they were looking for her replacement. They had auditioned 40 people and they couldn't find anybody. And wouldn't I be interested in that job? And I thought, oh my gosh, that's like, you know, like the universe is really trying to tell me something here. So I did. I called them up and they asked me, well, part of the story is they asked me if I had a video portfolio. Now, 2.5 years before, before I started teaching, I ended up getting a job as a receptionist at a place that made TV and radio commercials. And while they didn't pay me very well, or, you know, I didn't get to do anything very interesting, two guys had walked into the office that day and said, would you like to be in a TV commercial? I said, sure. They said, we give you a video portfolio. We can't pay you. And I said, great. So I ended up making a commercial for the Plainfield, Connecticut dog racing track. They put it on a videotape for me. And I didn't have any equipment on which to play this thing. So I just took it, filed it away. But then 2.5 years later, when Evening Magazine said, do you have a video portfolio? I said, yes, I do. I brought it in, never having seen it. So I didn't really know what it looked like or what I looked like. And then 3 weeks later, I called them back and I said, well, you know, what do you think? And they said, well, we can't tell much from it. Come in for an audition. So they told me to not wear black or white, to prepare an instant weekend and to show up at the Public Garden at 4:20 on a Thursday afternoon. And I did. And I wore red and I prepared this instant weekend, which was just a couple of events to tell people about. And I prepared it sort of like a doctoral dissertation. I mean, I really got very detailed about it. I had it all out on index cards. I rehearsed. I decided on my outfit. And I got there and there were 12 women that showed up and they were tall and blonde and voluptuous, and they had their modeling portfolios, and they were wearing spike heels. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Joyce, they're not looking for you. They're looking for something else. But you have a good education. I had a master's in English, and I was a good student. Yeah, so I thought, well, I'll get a job behind the scenes. I can write and speak, you know, all this stuff. And I got in front of the camera, and they put the mic on me. And I remember being very, very nervous all of a sudden because there was a camera and a microphone. And I thought, well, of course, you know, it's TV. I forgot everything I was going to say. And I mean, it was even like, hello, I'm Joyce Kolewick. I mean, it was terrible. And the index cards were going in and out of my pockets. And it was terrible. I couldn't wait to get out of there. And I pulled the mic off the end, and I started running really quickly. And the producer jumped out of the truck and came chasing after me and said, hey, come back here. I think you've got something we're looking for.
Wow.
And I said, what? Amnesia? I mean, I forgot everything. He said, no, just get rid of those cards. Come back, stand in front of the camera. We're just going to ask you a couple of questions. And they did, and I spoke. And then 3 weeks went by, and I didn't hear from anybody. And I thought, well, that's the end of that. And my mother once again said, Joyce, call them. So I did. And they said, oh, yeah, the producer wants to have lunch with you. We had lunch at the end of a 2-hour lunch, after which we talked about everything from books and vacations and travel and whatever. I said, well, how will I know if I have the job? And he said, Joyce, you have the job. That's why we're having lunch. So when I told you I was clueless, with no experience, no connections, not an idea, except I was just checking things out. I landed a job in the 6th largest television market in the country, where people spend years trying to get to. This was my local station, as an on-air person who also had to produce my little segments, which for me ended up being very easy because I was a writer. So I already knew how to write and tell a story and organize written material. And because I was a movie buff and a theater buff, I already had a visual kind of vocabulary. So I sat there with the editor and I could edit my stories with this person. And then I had to go out and deliver them on camera in short little bursts. So like a couple of minutes a week, which was just right for somebody just getting their feet wet. And I did that for about 3 years. And I have to say, from the minute I walked in the door at the TV station, I felt at home. And this is, I think, what we have to remember about everything in our lives. I mean, finding a partner, my husband now of 45 years, I immediately felt at home with him from day one. The job, I felt at home. You know your close friends, even if you lose touch with them for a while or whatever, when you talk with them again, you're home. There's no catch-up. There's no awkwardness. So this felt instantly wonderful. And after 3 years, I was promoted into the news department. And they said, we want you to be our consumer reporter. And I said, oh, okay. They said, well, this is a promotion. And I said, yeah, but you know, I'm not really into consumer issues. I mean, I can learn that for you and deliver it on the air. But you know, I already had a job I wasn't crazy about, so I wasn't going to do that again. They said, don't you understand? This is a big salary. But I said, yeah, well, no. Sometimes you have to know what to say no to.
So true.
You leave room for when it's time to say yes.
Yes.
So something can come in. And
yes.
I said, here's what I would do for you. The arts coverage, movies, theater, music, dance, the visual arts, all of it. They said, oh. 6 months later, they came and said, yes, we're going to do that. You're going to be the person who does it. You're going to do it on every newscast. You're going to do it at 5:30, 6, and 11. And I invented this whole beat in 1981. And I do think I was the first full-time arts and entertainment reporter as part of a regular newscast every night in the country.
Wow.
And same year that Entertainment Tonight went on the air, 1981.
Wow, really?
So they were doing this nationally. I was doing this locally, but I was doing something a little different. I wasn't just reporting like showbiz and who was seen at what restaurant. In fact, I wasn't reporting on that at all. I was doing real reporting on what artists bring to us, what they tell, what theater is about. And this is not anywhere in the arena. But WBZ-TV, which was the NBC affiliate at the time, and now the CBS affiliate, decided that this was a valuable part of the community to reflect. And absolutely. So it was no longer just news, sports, weather. It was news, sports, weather, and arts and entertainment.
Yeah.
And that became a very competitive beat for 30 years in our market. And it was so important and so revolutionary at the time that the New York Times actually wrote an editorial about this that I still have. And we started a whole public service campaign called You Gotta Have Arts. And I remember this. Oh yeah, went on for a long time.
Yep.
And gradually as TV more recently in the last 10, 15, 20 years has diminished local television because TV has expanded. I mean, there are so many more stations now, cable stations, streaming, so many more outlets that they're no longer just three stations to watch. There are 1,003 stations to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So revenues start diminishing and then they start cutting back on everything they think is non-essential. And of course, the arts were the first to go.
Yeah, which is so sad.
It's ridiculous.
Because it's really the most important, like you said.
Well, I always felt that.
Not everybody agrees with us on this point, but it is. It's the most important. We learn about life through the arts, right?
It is at least as important as the weather, as sports, and as your local school, you know, your local news. I mean, a cat up a tree is one thing, but, you know, Baryshnikov dancing on stage is something else.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all important.
It is.
But the arts are traditionally thought of as a frill. And of course, they are not. It is the way in which we connect to each other, past language, past our specific orientation, through music, through dance, through theater. It's the way that the culture has of speaking to itself. We see ourselves reflected in the movies and on stage, and it creates conversation and ideas and a sense of community and empathy, which we need.
Mm-hmm.
We connect. I mean, it's it's crucial. And we learn how to think creatively and outside the box. So, I mean, there's tons of data on when you have arts education as part of your foundational education in any school system, kids blossom mm-hmm. and take that method, that mm-hmm. mode, that way of looking at things into other arenas of their life. And for some kids, this is the only way, the only language through which they can communicate. So, I could go on and on and on about this, but for me, it was vital. It's not a frill and it's not showbiz, you know? I mean, that's like, you know, part of this whole thing we call entertainment, but it's
so true.
Much deeper than entertainment. Yeah.
Agreed. Absolutely. 100%. And as an artist myself, and it's vital to the development of the mind. It's one of the very few full brain functioning things that kids can do, you know, left brain, right brain integration. And it really does. I mean, studies show, like you said, it increases intelligence. It's on the list of one of the ways that you can be intelligent through music.
It helps our brain actually integrate information. I mean, they do know that in musicians, that corpus callosum in between halves of the brain is actually thicker in musicians.
Absolutely. And
yeah, there's a way of creating new pathways, et cetera, which is why I believe that, you know, playing certain kinds of music for infants is very important to their development. It's what they can use with stroke victims to help them learn how to walk.
Yes.
I mean, I've seen this demonstrated. And because now we have technology to help us actually quantify some of what has only been anecdotal to date, we can actually have data that shows what the effects of arts are on the actual organism. I mean, not to mention economically what the arts do mm-hmm. for communities, et cetera, et cetera. And these are all kind of ancillary things, but it is foundational. And
it really is.
Yeah,
I love that.
I'm always putting this message out there, and I feel like I'm an instrument, if you will. No pun intended, but actually every pun intended.
Yeah.
Communicating this material, and that artists can speak through me. I try to channel what they bring through their work and then write about it on my website, joyceschoices.com.
I love that.
Yeah. So, because I never felt like, even though I studied piano and I played piano and I sing and I dance, I didn't feel like I wanted to make my way as an artist. And I don't know that I had gifts enough to be Baryshnikov or whoever, but or to sing like you sing. But I knew that I was familiar enough with this arena to be able to carry these messages and amplify. And maybe that's what I do best. Amplify the good things.
I love
the name of the theme of your station, of what you do. Look for the good. That has always been my impulse.
I love that.
I am an eternal optimist. I believe in the good. I look for the good. I think everything is possible. We just have to figure out how. That's all.
I love that. And on that note, we're going to break real quick. Don't go anywhere. Anybody will be right back with Joyce.
Did you know 73% of employees are considering leaving their jobs, and almost half of Americans fear being laid off in the next year? That's a lot of fear and anxiety mulling around the office. In today's environment, employees need easy-to-use tools and strategies they can count on when the atmosphere is making them feel less than productive. To find out about proven ways to help your employees turn their stress into success, go to carrierowan.com and sign up for a free wellness consultation for your company today.
Ever notice how your brain automatically focuses on what's wrong in your life? Ever wonder why you find yourself telling the same old story about yourself over and over again? Tune into this high-energy show with author and mindset coach Carrie Rowan to find out how to retrain your brain to look for the good every Monday at 5 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. Carrie uses powerful storytelling, easy-to-use tools, and inspiring guests to exemplify how a simple shift in perspective can bring miraculous results. Join Carrie on a journey into your own transformation that will leave you feeling inspired, empowered, and ready to find the good every day of your life.
Are you tired of feeling stressed and stuck? Did you know that the stories we repeatedly tell can be the very thing that makes us feel worse about our life? In her best-selling book, Tell a New Story, host and author Carrie Rowan shares the five simple steps to release your negative stories and bring joy to your life. This is not your average self-help book. It's a joy to read, and it's interactive with QR codes for meditations, original songs, and how-to videos at just the perfect point in the story, which makes transformation easy and at your fingertips. So if you're ready to go from humming a sad song about your situation to finding your voice and whistling a new upbeat tune as you skip along with joy as the new soundtrack of your life, then get yourself a copy of Carrie's highly acclaimed book today. Go to carrierowan.com/book to get your copy now. That's CarrieRowan.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Look for the Good. I'm here with Joy Skull-Haywick, and we are having an incredible conversation. You know that we love to talk about the stories and the stories that we tell ourselves and the stories that we get hung up on about the things that happened to us in our life that we wish didn't happen. But when we can look at those stories and get in there and realize that those very stories that we think are the worst ones or that we can't share are the very ones that contain our superpowers. They're the ones that contain the most strength because we had to get over something and bring the beauty and look for the good in that despite our circumstances. So Joyce and I want to talk a little bit about that. You have some incredible stories and you have a lot of overcomer stories and comeback stories. Can you share one of those with us?
Yeah. And I guess what I want to say, just to back up a step, is it isn't even so much the content of these stories that's important. It's the sharing of these stories that's important. If you can get to a place where you're willing to be vulnerable enough to share the spaces and the places in you that are painful and difficult, and I don't mean with necessarily the world, but with close friends or with anybody, even with yourself in a journal. But to be able to, I guess what I'm saying is to be in touch with your vulnerability, is to be in touch with the part of yourself that links you to everybody, is to be in touch with your mortality, that raw place that connects you very deeply to that which we all share, that open space. That's the place that allows you to actually connect with someone else. It's not our perfect selves when our hair is coiffed and our makeup is on and we find, you know, it's the raw places. It's so I discovered that more clearly for myself when I had cancer. And I am a three-time cancer survivor, and it is a very, it's an unusual story because there's like virtually no cancer in my family. I am a remarkably healthy person, except for like these three bouts with cancer, and a miraculous kind of recovery. But what I discovered when I had them, when I'm lying in a bed, not knowing if I'm going to live or die, that, and I was willing to share that story, and I was a public person on the air, but it never occurred to me to hide that story from anybody, that I didn't want to put energy into hiding, that I wanted to put my energy into sharing. And even though this happened to me like 30 or 40 years ago, when people weren't really talking about cancer, I don't know why, but it never occurred to me to hide it. And I guess it's because partly I never thought it had anything to do with me. I never felt there was a stigma attached to it. Cancer was one of the things that I feel like I experienced guilt-free.
Like this, wow.
Yeah, this was happening to me. Somehow my body was like trying to kill me or something. I mean, like I didn't identify with it. It was a problem to be solved. That's how I looked at it. Like for some bizarre reason, I have this disease. I didn't spend a lot of time thinking about why me or poor me or being angry because, you know, life doesn't owe you anything. No one owes you anything. Anything can happen anytime. It's all kind of random. And I already felt so incredibly lucky to be A, alive, B, to have a family, C, to have a job, D, to have a roof over my head, you know, E, to have mostly a pretty healthy go of it. Like, well, why not? Stuff happens to people all the time. This is what I got. So I'm going to deal with this. And then I attacked it like a problem to be solved.
I love that.
So I wanted to just say, hey, look, we all got something. This is the something I got. The best I can do with this is to tell you what I'm learning about this. And in that sharing, people then could share back. In letting myself be helped, I was giving a gift to people who needed to be able to help. If that makes any sense,
yeah,
it is a tremendous gift to be able to give something to somebody, but you can't let people give to you unless you're willing to be vulnerable. And then when you're vulnerable and you get over this, if you're lucky enough to, you can give, you can pass that along. So it really creates this tremendous momentum in the world, this wonderful dynamic. So the sharing, the place of mortality, the openness, if you can risk it, is an incredible gift to yourself and to the people around you who then have the opportunity to give to you. And then we're all kind of in this thing together, which is exactly where we all are, no matter how it looks on the surface. And I've interviewed a lot of people. I mean, everybody from Meryl Streep to Arnold Schwarzenegger to, you know, Madonna to... We're all the same. I swear. We are all the same. Everybody just wants to be loved and accepted. That is the foundational place. And if we can all remember this, we will treat everybody just the same and understand that we're all in this connected. So my cancer for me was a great gift. And I'm lucky enough to be able to continue to share what I know about it. And I learned an incredible amount about dealing with a problem like this. So the first time I had cancer, I was 26 years old. It was about 10 days before my wedding. And it was a double wedding. I was getting married at the same ceremony with my brother, who was also getting married. And he and I are very close, always have been, still are. He's 2 years younger than I am. And we were getting married, and I was sitting in front of the TV about 10 days before this, and I was watching the Phil Donahue show. Phil Donahue, I don't know if you people in your audience may remember, but
I do.
He was the guy who invented Oprah, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah. And he was he had a guest on his show who said she had cancer of the colon, and it all started with a mole on her leg. And I looked down, and there's a mole on my leg. And I had been aware of that mole for about a year. And there was nothing more to it than it was just a big black mole that had suddenly appeared about a year before. It didn't hurt. It wasn't bleeding. It wasn't itchy. But there was something about that, her saying that at that time, 10 days before my wedding. And I thought, you know, why don't I just get this checked out? I want to tie up all the loose ends, whatever, just before, you know, because we're going on our honeymoon and all that stuff. So I call up a dermatologist because it's on my leg. It's on my skin. Call up the dermatologist, go in. He looks at it. He says, oh, doesn't look like anything. I said, well, I want a biopsy. Now, you have to have a certain amount of aggressiveness to be asking things of your doctor.
You do.
I have to say, I always had, and I got that from my mother, who always was a speaker-upper. And I always ask for what I want. I think you have to ask for what you want. And you start with the moon and maybe you end up with the stars, you know.
I love it.
Yeah, you got to start there. You have to have the confidence and the courage enough to be willing, but also the respect for yourself is where it comes from, really. To ask for what you need for yourself. And I'm in charge of my body and I'm taking care of this shell. So I asked, and he said, oh, yeah, we can do that. I said, you'll get the results in about a week or two. And I said, no, I have to have... the results right. He said, well, you'll have to carry it over to the lab yourself. And I said, okay, no problem. So he takes the biopsy, pops it in a jar, and I carry it over with my fiance, now husband, through the Chestnut Hill Mall to the Chestnut Hill Medical Center, and I deposit it at the lab. And 2 days later, they call me, I'm going to say semi-hysterical. I'm at work at Evening Magazine. The doctor calls me, a different doctor, this guy's boss, and says, Ms. Kulhawick, we have got the lab results back. We are 99% sure you have malignant melanoma. You have to check yourself to a hospital. We're going to do brain scans, liver scans, blah, blah. And I said, whoa, 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 what are you telling me? He never used the word cancer, but he used the word malignant, which I associated with. Mm-hmm. And I had to ask him, are you telling me I have some kind of cancer? And he said, yes. And he goes on this spiel again. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what do you mean?
Oh my God, I'm surprised you didn't pass out.
It was incredible. It was incredible. And so I thought, Wow. Well, there's my experience with cancer.
Right?
And 10 years later, I'm in my room doing a yoga workout. And I suddenly felt really cold. And I thought, oh, I forgot to put the thermostat up. And I went and I looked, the thermostat's up, and it's me who's cold. And within minutes, I start having chills, temperatures rising, abdominal pain. I mean, like all of a sudden, I got myself into the car, drove myself to the nearest ER, got in the door of the Lahey Clinic, and they looked at me and they said, I looked almost green, like I was going to pass out. And I felt like nauseous and faint. They checked me into the hospital, diagnosed me with an infection, gave me intravenous antibiotics, released me with a clean bill of health 5 days later. But somehow I just felt like I wasn't quite right. And I'm a person that when everything is right, I really rebound. Mm-hmm. I have energy, I'm resilient, and I knew something was off. And I called my doctor, this time a gynecologist, and I gave her the story. She said, doesn't sound right. We're going to check you into another hospital. They checked me into the BI. They said, oh yeah, that appendix has got to come right out. They wheeled me into surgery. It's not my appendix. It's ovarian cancer. And again, shocker. They removed one ovary. They closed me up. They didn't see any other spread. It seemed to be contained. No chemo, no nothing. Stage 1A. And this is a terrible cancer. It's a very tough cancer. But they thought they got it in time. And they said, we don't have to do anything now. Have your family. I didn't have any kids at that point. Come back after you have your family and we'll do a total hysterectomy. And I thought, well, that's kind of a mixed signal. They're not worried enough to do anything now, mm-hmm. but they're worried enough that they want me to come back and have everything. But I took that in because, you know, these are doctors. Could they be wrong? Ah, yes. Yes. So, but, you know, doctors know what they know.
And they do.
It's on a sliding scale and there are more informed and less informed doctors. So that decision actually nearly cost me my life because a year and a half later, I'm on an airplane to Nairobi. We're going on an African safari, my husband and I. And as the plane is coming in for a landing in Nairobi, I am racked with abdominal pain. And I'm like, oh my God, this can't be it. Could it? Is this the flu? Did I eat a bad clam? I mean, what happened? Do I turn around and fly all the way home? Do I check myself into a hospital in Nairobi? No good options before me. I checked myself into a hotel, holed up for a couple of days, felt well enough to do the whole safari. We hiked into the Virunga Mountains, met the mountain gorillas, hacked our way through the jungle. I mean, wow. It was amazing. Came home, had more pain, called the doctors. They said, oh, pancreatitis. I said, are you sure this isn't a recurrence of ovarian cancer? They said, we're positive. This disease is behind you. But they did a test, a CA125, and that came back elevated, really elevated. And that's a marker for this disease. It's not a diagnostic tool, but it's a marker. Mm-hmm. And they said, we may have made a mistake. We think this is a recurrence. They scheduled me for surgery. I didn't make the surgery. The night before the surgery, I had more abdominal pain. And this tumor now had ruptured for the third time. Oh. And it was everywhere. And they rushed me into surgery. And this time it wasn't stage 1A. It was stage maybe 1C or 2A, but it was touch and go. And they didn't know what the prognosis was going to be. I had to wait that out for like 5 days. And then they came in and said, yep, it's stage whatever. You're going to have 6 months of chemotherapy. And then, you know, we'll see what happens. But I have to say that 5 days while I'm lying on that bed, just hoping, Oh my God, if I could just take a walk in the woods this fall, I'll be grateful for that. It's amazing how back to zero we get, how the fundamentals immediately percolate up.
Unbelievable.
What I also learned, of course, was that people can be wrong, that we need to challenge, that we need to ask questions, we need to get second opinions, third opinions, that medicine is an art and a science, that new information, especially now, is coming in all the time. That was 30-something years ago, and I have never had a recurrence since. I watch myself carefully. I'm not paranoid, but I am vigilant. Mm-hmm. And you just do the best you can with what you got. But that's what I learned. But the most important thing was that there is a tremendous font of love and support out there for everyone. And that there were people out there sending me love and healing vibes that I didn't even know. And that there are people working all the time in organizations devoted to the care of cancer patients, through the American Cancer Society, through the Tina's Wish Foundation, through the Wellness Foundation, through every person who's doing work like that are helping people that they never know or see. And it's all there for us to access, and we should let it in and then pass it along.
Love that.
And it helped heal me. I know it did. We need to first, it begins with us speaking up for ourselves, asking for what we need. And I would like to tell women especially, do not be afraid to challenge your doctors and ask them questions. Good doctors welcome second opinions. They welcome your questions, and you feel their healing love when you're with them. One of the most incredible doctors I ever knew, a family friend, said a good doctor loves the patient, loves the patient. And that means being really open and connected. And that is the beginning of your healing. And it's not that everyone will be healed. I mean, I knew that I could live with doing the best that I could. I would have found it hard to live with feeling like, oh, if I had only asked, if I had only.
That's hard.
I didn't have any regrets.
Regret is hard. Yeah.
I just knew that if I did the best I could and I still wasn't going to survive, so be it. You know, it's nobody gets out of here alive, as I love to say. That's it. That's the human being.
I love that. It's so true.
The best we can, forgive ourselves, be open, share. Understand we're all in this together and help each other as best we can. Yeah. There's nothing more than that.
I love that. And I know you guys are hanging on our every word. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Are you tired of feeling stressed and stuck? Did you know that the stories we repeatedly tell can be the very thing that makes us feel worse about our life? In her best-selling book, Tell a New Story, host and author Carrie Rowan shares the five simple steps to release your negative stories and bring joy to your life. This is not your average self-help book. It's a joy to read, and it's interactive with QR codes for meditations, original songs, and how-to videos at just the perfect point in the story, which makes transformation easy and at your fingertips. So if you're ready to go from humming a sad song about your situation to finding your voice and whistling a new upbeat tune as you skip along with joy as the new soundtrack of your life, then get yourself a copy of Carrie's highly acclaimed book today. Go to carrierowan.com/book to get your copy now. That's CarrieRowan.
Are you ready to consistently be in the flow of success, build an abundant business, easily find your right clients, and feel good inviting them into your community to do business with you? If your answer is yes, then you want to listen to Business Success with Human Design with Nancy O'Keefe on syndicated Dream Vision 7 Radio Network every Thursday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Business Success with Human Design is a podcast designed to help you peel back the layers of who you have been taught to be and how you've been told to do business, moving you from overwhelm to a business model that aligns with your authentic self and feels right for you. Come and explore Human Design for Business with Nancy.
Did you know 73% of employees are considering leaving their jobs, and almost half of Americans fear being laid off in the next year? That's a lot of fear and anxiety mulling around the office. In today's environment, employees need easy-to-use tools and strategies they can count on when the atmosphere is making them feel less than productive. To find out about proven ways to help your employees turn their stress into success, go to carrierowan.com and sign up for a free wellness consultation for your company today.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back to Look for the Good. We're here with Joyce Kolhewyk. Your stories are so moving. And one of the things that I really surmise from all listening to all your stories is you have this innate sense, this real deep belief in yourself, this positivity, which we talked about before, but you know, where you said things like the cancer was something that you needed to solve. You sort of can look at things objectively. I love to talk to people, right, about what they say to themselves. Go ahead. You've got an idea. I want to hear it.
Yeah. I mean, I did look at the cancer kind of objectively. I never spent a lot of time, as I said, thinking, oh, why me? Why not? But I think a couple of things occur to me. I think I was very lucky to have parents who believed in me and my brother. I mean, I had a really good foundation, working class parents who worked hard. And we were the center of their lives in many ways. I mean, they just thought we were it and supported, but also required a lot of us. I mean, we were not spoiled kids. I worked, you know, we all worked, working to achieve. But my mother would believe in me in ways that before I believed in myself, I'd say, could I do that? And she'd say, Joyce, of course you can do that. She would say, you're going to do this. And I'd say, really? I mean, she had me going down to the credit union at age 9 on the bus. I mean, you wouldn't do this now, I guess. But right. Like my uncle was like one of the bus drivers in town. You know, so it was like more of a small town, although it was Bridgeport, Connecticut. And I would show up at the credit union to pay the bills. And they would look at me like, who? What? How are you? You know.
That's awesome.
I said, can I do? And my mother would say, you're going to do this. And then you're going to do this. And they gave us responsibilities. And we, you know, I had chores and I did them. And, you know, and they weren't hovering all over us with, you know, your homework and this and that. They told us what was expected and we did them. And they all had expectations. So there's partly that. Mm-hmm. Also, I had an incredible living example in my mother, who was a working mother. Had a full-time job, and my grandmother had a full-time job. So I came from a long line of working women. And my father, who was a full-time working father, was also very proud of my mother's working. Mm. So there was this male component. There was the man and the woman side by side. And my dad shared in household chores. I mean, this was in the 50s and the 60s
before
we did this. And we didn't think of it as anything special. My father changed diapers and gave us baths, and he worked 6 nights a week. You know, I mean, and my mother worked all day. And so obviously Richard and I, we were also working. That was what the family did. And so there was that. So that was a fabulous example and a foundation that I had that I was very lucky to receive. And then there's something about being optimistic. You know, I was raised as a Catholic. I no longer am a practicing Catholic. I don't appreciate all the rules, et cetera. And I'm not crazy about all the bureaucracy of the church and all of that stuff. But the foundational teachings, you know, Christian teachings. And when I say Christian, I mean what Christ taught, you know, loving, being open to everyone. And this is something I think that all religions share in the most foundational way, not the business of any church or any religion, but the foundational beliefs, which are in the good, in the shared humanity of all of us from every persuasion. This is the non-specific religious belief system that I currently have. And I had that. I mean, my earliest desire was, I think, to be a nun.
Really?
Yes, I wanted to be a nun. And we awesome. Lived right behind the church and the convent. And I loved that the nuns lived in community with a spiritual goal, and they were so gentle and loving and whatever. But then in my junior year of high school, I got elected to be president of my class. And I was like, really? They want me to do this? And I took to it like a duck to water, as they say. And I realized, wait a minute, I can't be a nun. I should be out in the world. So I think it's allowing yourself to be tuned into your own stuff, mm-hmm. what your gifts are, what your skill set is, and these will change over time. So I believed in, I guess I always believed in possibility, that the world was open and that I wanted to be the most me that I could be. Whatever that was.
I love that phrase.
So there's that. And I didn't know what that would be. But if you sometimes lay back a little bit, know when to say no, know when to say yes. And if you don't know, try. Just move. If you're stuck, take a step. It'll become clear immediately whether that's forward or back.
Mm.
And or whether you need to adjust that path or not. And for some reason, I'm thinking of this funny story, which I think taps into a lot of pieces about this. I was about to interview the great ballet dancer, Rudolf Nureyev. Now, Rudolf Nureyev predated Baryshnikov. He was a Russian defector, and he was a brilliant dancer. He was maybe the first Russian dancer that defected that we were all aware of. And he was coming to perform in Boston, and I wanted to interview him before he got to Boston, and he was stopping in Saratoga first. And we called up, we asked if we could interview him. They said yes. They flew me out there. I get to the place, and they said, well, we'll ask Mr. Nureyev if he'll agree to the interview. And I said, what do you mean, ask? I'm here. You said yes. And they said, well, you know, whatever. So they walk over to Mr. Nureyev, and he's looking over their shoulder at me and saying, so the woman comes back and she says, yes, Mr. Nureyev will talk to you, but you just be, it'll be 20 minutes and make sure he's fully engaged, because if he gets bored, he's going to get up and walk away. And I thought, oh, wow, no pressure on this. But I look at him and I said, well, okay, if we've only got 20 minutes, I'll race you to the lawn. I said to him, I don't know where I got that. But again, my mother, who spoke up in every circumstance, I will say.
I love it.
Yeah. I mean, as a little aside, my mother once said to a doctor, this doctor said to her, who are you to ask me questions? And she said, who am I? Who are you to not be asked questions of? Everybody gets asked questions. Jesus Christ was asked questions. I thought, oh, this doctor doesn't know who he's talking to. So I was always a little bit, you know, more aggressive about this kind of thing.
What a great role model.
Oh, phenomenal. So I raced Nureyev to the lawn. He kind of thought that was funny. We sit down in these two chairs. We end up having a really good conversation. And he, as an artist, was very open and very passionate about dance. And he talked to me like from the soul, from the heart. Mm. And I thought, wow, okay, this is phenomenal. And I thought, I better end this before he gets bored. And I reached out. I said, Mr. Nureyev, thank you so much. I reached out to shake his hand. He leaned in. He shook my hand. I leaned back in my chair, and my chair goes right over.
No!
Right back. We're outside on the lawn, and my legs go flying up past the camera level, and I'm lying on my back in front of the most graceful man in the world. And my cameraman jumps up, and he says, Joyce, get up. And I'm looking up at the sky, and then I see Nureyev's head come in, and he's looking at me, and he is laughing. And I then start laughing, and I said, well, if Mr. Nureyev would help me, I would get up. And Nureyev reaches out his hand. I grab his hand. He lifts me up and says, ah, an arabesque. And I said, you can use that anytime you want. And what that's I awesome. Say from this is, sometimes you will end up falling flat on your face or flat on your back. Accept the help you were given and get up. And you never know what kind of dance you're going to do.
That is beautiful, Joyce. Yeah. I want to clap right now.
It was hysterical. It could have been the most embarrassing thing in the world. And you know what? Who hasn't fallen down on stage, right?
Right. Of course.
Has fallen down in life. Who hasn't made a fool of themselves somewhere? Forgive, take help, forgive yourself, forgive others. I'm still learning that lesson. That's what I work on all the time. Just be gentle with yourself.
That's the one. Yeah. Be compassionate, right? That's where it starts. It starts here with ourselves, you know, being compassionate for who we are, what we've been through, what we're dealing with. And when we can be compassionate with ourselves, that's where it's born out of, to give it to other people.
Well, exactly. And then people see that, and people, more than seeing it, people feel that mm-hmm. when they're not being judged and when you're not judging yourself. And this is a very hard lesson for me. I mean, so they say we teach, as you said, teach best what we need to learn. Mm-hmm. All this stuff I'm saying, I'm still learning this.
We all are. It's so true. And then, as you said before, that's why I wrote my book really for myself, right? Because we teach that which we most need to learn.
Absolutely. You know, when you're aligned in a certain way with yourself, it's kind of like what rainmakers do. It was the best description of rainmakers I've ever heard. I said, what's it about rainmakers that makes it rain? And I think it's something like when you are so in harmony with what is around, that what needs to happen can happen. Mm. So when a rainmaker comes into a place that's parched, this rainmaker is so harmoniously aligned that what needs to happen, rain, can happen. And I think this is so true for us, that sometimes we don't need to go in there and solve and meddle and, you know, it's kind of like the I Ching lesson.
Yeah.
We just be. Just be. Accept. Breathe. What needs to then happen can happen. The best that can happen will happen. Whatever can happen will happen. And everybody's on a different path, and mm-hmm. they cannot be on the path we're on. We need to accept, and this is very good with parents and children. I'm learning this with my own daughter, who's now 30 years old, and she's on her path. I'm on my path, and we are different people. Don't ever get that confused. But we have so much to learn from each other. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, got to get out of the way. Yeah. Let it be. The great Beatles.
Right? I thought you were going to break out into song for us right there.
Just about.
And, you know, I'll sum that up. The word that kept coming into my mind when you were describing the rainmaker is allow, right? Just, which is really let it be. Allowing. You know, that's why they can make the rain come, because they just allow it. They allow it to happen.
That is hard. It is hard to just allow. Mm-hmm. We know we're there when that becomes effortless.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Do we ever really get there? Do we? We don't really ever get there. There's no getting there. Right. It's this process. And I tell people to look for the joy, because that's really when clients come to me. That's what we're looking for. If you don't have joy, if you're not living with joy, then you're really missing.
Well, I would also say this. I mean, we're not joyful all the time. Honestly, there are some days. I mean, I have to say, I love the rainy days. There are days I'm depressed. There are days when I'm gray, when I'm down. It is all life. And it's like, oh, this is one of those depressed days. I think you have to kind of step back and go, oh, this is one of those days when I'm flat on my back looking at the sky. And this is, oh, I'm just so down and blue. Go with that.
Allow it. Yeah, allow it.
Allow it. You know, it's just part of. We're still living. I mean, we're living. That is the most incredible thing, isn't it? We don't have to be here, but we are. Wow. Wow. Whatever country this is. Yes.
Yes. I hear a lot of gratitude in everything you're saying. A lot of reflection back on gratitude. We talk a lot about gratitude here. And it is. It's even for the littlest things. When we're pushed up against the wall and all of a sudden all those big things, you know, like you said before, you really dial it back down to the basic. I'd really just like to go out and walk tomorrow. Like, and we can do that. We can do that today. We can appreciate what we have today and find what's good. Beautiful. This has been such a beautiful conversation. I have enjoyed this. I'm giving you a big virtual hug right now, because I just so appreciate you sharing your heart with us today.
Yeah, and to all these listeners out there whom I cannot see, I feel you, and I hope you feel me. And we need to keep this going throughout the world, through the universe.
Agreed. Agreed. Amen on that. And thank you so much, Joyce, again, for coming on. And remember, everybody, remember, it is never too late to live your best story. So be well.
Thanks for tuning in to Look for the Good with your host, Carrie Rowan, best-selling author and mindset coach. Join us every Monday at 5 a.m. and 5 p.m. right here at Dream Vision 7 Radio Network. If you weren't able to catch an episode, no worries. Just visit our website to find all the archived episodes of Look for the Good on demand so you don't miss a thing. And remember, it's never too late to live your best story. For additional resources or to find out about how you can work with Carrie directly, visit carrierowan.com for more details.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.